Welcome to the first edition of the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium podcast. I bet you're wondering who ESMC is and what they do. And I bet you're wondering why you should take time to listen to this podcast. Here is why. With carbon and environmental credits being a hot topic right now, there is a huge financial potential for agriculture. In this series of podcasts, you will learn how and why. I'm your host, Lori Boyer, and I'm joined by Debbie Reed, who is the ESMC Executive Director. Today, we will cover carbon market development and offsets. Debbie, to get us going today, first, let's talk about who and what ESMC is.
So ESMC is a public-private partnership, and we're made up of organizations across the agricultural supply chain and value chain. And we are working together to build ecosystem service markets that scale, that are cost-effective, and that meet the needs of both buyers and sellers exclusively in the agricultural space. And our sellers are corporations largely in the food and beverage sector who have taken on commitments to reduce their footprint, basically their environmental footprints, including in their agricultural supply.
We are actually going to be doing a series of podcasts. And during each one of these podcasts, we're going to cover certain elements of what you do as an organization and things going on in the industry. In the first set of our podcasts, we'll be talking about the development of carbon markets as a whole and how the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium fits into that. In our second set of podcasts, we'll talk about the market program design, and it says MRV on my notes. I'm not quite sure what that means. What is MRV?
Monitoring, reporting, and verification. It's what you have to do to generate an environmental credit.
I might be asking you that again. Every industry has acronyms, so we want to be nice and clear about that. That's how we can have a good discussion so we all understand the acronyms. So for our first one here today, let's talk about carbon market development and offsets. And I think maybe, Debbie, the best way to do is kind of break it down, even with a little bit of history on carbon markets in general.
Yeah, that's great. So carbon markets generally started about 25 years ago when countries across the world started thinking about the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and really were focusing on the highest emitting sectors. In other words, sectors that emit the most greenhouse gases. And at that time, 25 years ago, it was the electric or energy sector, transportation sector, and then building and industry sector, basically. So policies were directed at getting those sectors to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. The concept of offsets came about to think about how can you get other sectors to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, particularly that may be less costly than those sectors with the highest emissions, and get them to perhaps trade credits so that in the early years, when those sectors, which tend to be very capital intensive industries that have long horizons for investment and capital investments that are very costly, how can you give them an opportunity in the early years while they're making long term capital investment and turnover to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions from other sectors? And that's how the idea of offsets in carbon markets came up. So 25 years ago, it was envisioned that those markets would be a perhaps 20-year bridge to reduce greenhouse gas emissions slowly from those corporations until the real long-term investment started kicking in and we started seeing real reductions from energy, from transportation, from buildings and industry.
Has it been successful? Have the results that were originally stated or envisioned been successful, Debbie?
No. So in those 25 years, what really did happen is the rules around carbon markets, around offsets, how they were created, started to come together. The industry went through a lot of growth phases. There came to be players in those markets, including registries who register credits and engage in the sale, the development and sale of them. There were project developers, there were projects, there were protocols. A lot of that work was done, but the markets never really scaled and they never became successful, except in a few cases like energy credits, for instance. But offsets themselves, there was not a lot of success. And as early as 2018, the prices that did exist for those markets started to go down. Now, there are some parts of the world like the EU where they did start emissions trading schemes and have carbon markets that are specific to the EU, which has a compliance or regulatory program to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the rest of the world, the voluntary carbon markets, they have just kind of limped along until about 2018. But then all of a sudden, with lots of companies now really starting to get serious, with scientists really starting to say, we have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, carbon markets have taken on a whole new life. And there's suddenly such interest that there are now projections that these are going to be $100 billion markets within the next 20 years, right? So lots of interest, lots of growth that we are already seeing that was not happening as late as 2018.
Can I ask you, is a carbon credit interchangeable with the word offset? Are they the same thing?
It's a good question. Yes. Generally, a carbon credit in the most used jargon or nomenclature refers to an offset, a carbon offset. There are new types of credits coming into market. But generally, if we refer to a credit, we are referring to a carbon offset. Yes.
Is a credit typically in the form of a tax break, or is this like a dollar traded type of thing?
Yeah. A credit is generally one ton of carbon dioxide or the equivalent of a carbon dioxide, because different greenhouse gases have different molecular weights and thus different values that trade. So it's typically one ton of CO2 emission reduced that then has a specific dollar value at any given point in time. But the credit itself represents a ton of carbon, which is intangible, right? It's something that you have to quantify and have the backing to show how you've quantified it for that intangible credit to exist.
And is it backed by paperwork documents, or like how is it proven?
Yes. So lots and lots of paperwork and documentation. You are correct. To the point that I think that's one of the reasons carbon markets never really scaled, because while the rules were being developed, while the protocols were being developed, I would say, this is my personal opinion, there was such rigor associated with a lot of these offsets that the cost of generating a credit was often more expensive than what it might sell for. That is particularly true in the agricultural sector. Now, there's a reason for that, right? Because an intangible credit, something you can't hold in your hand, you can't put into a vault, it is very intangible, has to have rigorous documentation to show that it exists. Otherwise, it's, you know, monopoly money, right? And so there is necessarily rigor associated with it. But with new technologies, I think our ability to actually document the existence of one of these intangible carbon credits, our ability to do that goes up, and the cost of doing it has gone down.
Are carbon credits traded or bought and purchased from country to country, or does it have to stay within each country or even within each region for that matter?
Yeah. So carbon is, and carbon markets for that matter, are global, because if you reduce one ton of carbon from the atmosphere, it impacts the atmosphere, and we all share the same atmosphere. So they are not local markets. And in fact, credits can be traded between countries. And that has been happening historically, going even back to the 1990s, when the very first mechanism in carbon markets were formed. Those trades have been supported and have been happening for a while, largely in other sectors, not agriculture, but increasingly over time in agriculture.
Is the price rated from industry to industry? So such as in manufacturing versus agriculture, is there a price difference in how those are priced out?
Yes. Yeah, so I would say yes and no, because some offsets are in fact permanent. And so if you remove something from being utilized, for instance, a gas that was once used and is no longer used, you create a permanent offset. Those types of offsets tend to have more value than something that is not permanent and that has to be monitored over longer periods of time. There are also some credits that are easier to monitor. So consider, for instance, a methane digester, often associated with animal agriculture and manure. If you put a cap on a methane digester, you can literally have equipment that measures how much methane is being captured and going into a pipeline. That is very easy for us to document and show that methane was in fact generated, captured, and then entered a pipeline, right? Because it's technologically easy. Those tend to have high value. If it's something like soil carbon, which is much harder to measure, to quantify, to monitor over time, those have historically had lower value, but right now they are of great interest because the world scientists have said they're necessary. And they're associated with food production, with agricultural production, right? So we know that we need them and they have multiple benefits.
And are they, well, at least I'm guessing, they're sold even on the time of the year when manufacturing might be heavier, you know, certain times of the year, depending on what is needed, or in the farming example, you know, during harvest season when we're more active. Is that true?
Well, it is true for some sectors. So you pointed out agriculture as an industry is very seasonal. So when and how you can generate credits and put them onto a market differs from when you can do it in a lot of other industry. So the markets are completely ongoing and trades and sales are happening all day, every day. But the time that you can generate a credit from agriculture production is different. And that's something that a lot of buyers who have been reaching out to the agricultural sector are starting to realize. They say, I want credits that were developed from this date to this date, and they don't often align with how agriculture works. So agriculture and probably some other sectors are very seasonal. So the generation of credits, the sale of credits follows that seasonality as well.
Again, in agriculture, I'll keep on that example. When a farmer is selling their commodities, they go through the elevator or a brokerage firm, a commodity trader. Is there that type of trader for carbon credits out there?
There are. We are just now starting to see credits being posted in places like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, right? As a matter of fact, CME just announced that they have a platform for carbon credit futures to be traded, right? That is new and that is different. I think it's exciting because we know farmers watch those boards, right? And so if in fact you can create mechanisms like that allow agricultural producers in particular and those in the agricultural supply chain to do business as usual and utilize those same mechanisms, you are likely to see greater success both on the sell side, right, producers, and the buy side, those in the agricultural and food and beverage sector. So there is change happening there that I think is very exciting.
And then is there like a brokerage firm, for lack of a better term, for like the more manufacturing industries that are using carbon credits or carbon offsets?
There are different players. So there are carbon registries that act as brokers. They confirm the validity of credits. They sometimes list them in a registry. There are often other players, though, that for a certain sector will do due diligence for a buyer and try to source credits from a registry. And then there are also project developers who will often work directly with an industry or a buyer and say, what are the credits you need from which sector, you know, for maybe a very specific type of credit, will then develop projects to generate them. So there are different actors in these markets that have evolved over time that take on different roles. But I think brokers is one of them. They probably have different titles in these industries.
And that segues into one of my last questions here on this topic anyway. And I know this will probably come back in some of our future podcasts as we continue to elaborate and find out more about this whole idea, the whole notion of carbon credits and visiting with you more about what Ecosystem Services Market Consortium does. So I'm sure this will be intertwined in again. But my question then is, who monitors all this? Who polices what's going on and makes sure that everybody's on the up and up?
Yes. Generally and historically, the carbon registries, right, who actually create the or approve the protocol, some of them create them, some of them approve them, largely run by civil society and organizations, environmental NGOs, et cetera, are the ones who have been the police in this system. With all of the interest, with all of the growth, there are new, what I would call police, if you will, coming into the system. There are new organizations to whom companies are reporting how they reduce their emissions, where and what offsets, if you will, they are buying. And so there's now, I think, new enforcement sorts of individuals and organizations entering the scene to ensure that with all of the current and projected growth in carbon markets, that there is due diligence, that there are standards, that there is a credibility and an integrity that can be ensured. So there's a lot more policemen, if you will, entering these markets now. And I think that's a good and a necessary.
This is a fascinating discussion. I think we laid some pretty good groundwork, for what we're talking about with carbon offsets. Is there anything I missed asking you or any other points that need to be made on this before we move on?
No, I think the relevant point here is that agricultural credits and offsets are of high interest and high value right now, because we know that we have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture. They need to be voluntary. So credits coming from agriculture can be an important source. But we also know that the greenhouse gas emissions associated with agriculture tend to make agriculture more resilient to the very issue we're trying to address, which is, in fact, climate change. So there's a nice opportunity here for agriculture to be a solution set in these carbon markets.
Debbie Reed, Executive Director of the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Thank you for tuning in to this ESMC podcast. The work of the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium and further information is available at ecosystemservicesmarket.org.